middle of my own journey and things. I've called it to a theology of change. I thought I'd begin with where I am and who I am, because it very much informs where I've gone with it. I regard myself as being a theologically conservative Swedenborgian. Get your head around all of that. Theologically conservative Swedenborgian. I have had a great deal of contact with a number of evangelical churches, and many of the people that I've met there I've felt an affinity with, and felt that I've shared a lot of common ground with them. So I don't really regard myself as a liberal, because whilst I appreciate certain things about the liberal churches, I don't identify quite so much with them. I'll let you read it to that what you like at the moment. Today what I'm going to do is say some things that are troubling. You may find them troubling, but I want you to know that I find them troubling too. And that's possibly why I'm saying it. In terms of where I hope to take us, I want to just begin with a starting point, which is I accept Swedenborg's work as authoritative in some way. And I guess that many of the people, most of the people, perhaps all of the people around the table also regard Swedenborg's work as authoritative in some way. However, I recognise that that acceptance of Swedenborg's writing does not bind me to accept the conclusions of others who accept Swedenborg's writing as authoritative. And I accept that you are not bound to accept the conclusions I come to from Swedenborg's work, because you accept it as authoritative. I found one example, and I'm going to quote often from New Church Life. Now, please don't get hung up on the fact that I'm quoting from New Church Life. This just happens to be what I read and where I found my examples from. I want to draw a much broader picture here than just that. So, in the latest edition of New Church Life, in a letter responding to Frank Rose, this is written: "The Lord's Church," and then it quotes from Swedenborg, "is everywhere in the whole world, although specifically it is where the Lord is acknowledged and where the Word is," and that's from our Carmen Celestia. Then it goes on: "By the Word here, we mean the heavenly doctrine as well as the Old and New Testaments." So, what I want you to understand is that whilst I accept the quotation from Swedenborg, there's no demand that I accept that particular author's conclusion from it, or the extra bit that they've added on, which is, "By the word here we mean the heavenly doctrines as well as the Old and New Testaments." Now, that quote sort of reflects one of the major controversies within the New Church. That's right. So I'm rather glad that the particular person who wrote that began the sentence with, "By the word here, we mean," because it's an intellectual honesty. Okay, this person's owning up, "We mean this," rather than just the assumption that it is the case. No. Right.
That's a very generous interpretation. Okay.
Now, so taking all that, what I then want to say is there is something essential to Swedenborg's definition of what it is to be a church to actually understand all of that. So Swedenborg says, "If charity were its essential element, there would be one church, not a division into many. And it would then not matter if their teachings about faith and external forms of worship were different. So there is something about a church which must have within it a sense of authority, if you like, or an acceptance of a basic authority, but then that we can all look at that authority in a particular way, in our own particular way. And whilst we might discuss and argue about what those particular ideas might be, we are not bound, any of us, to accept another person's conclusion based on that authority. Do you follow me? Okay. So, then another quote that I found. A disagreement in the doctrinals of faith does not prevent the church from being one, provided there is a unanimity as to willing well and acting well. Now, I just want from that then to think about what is it that we all share, this group here, just keep it within these four walls, that makes us here and now part of what Swedenborg calls a church. What is it that we share that makes us here, within these four walls, a church in some form?
Love for each other.
By that I take a meeting of minds. It might be the place in which we do it, but there's the meeting of minds.
Maybe it's the same thing, you know, except it's a sweet or just it's the common blue.
I want to say love. You know, love for the Lord, love of God, or something like that. But I don't want to imply that everybody has to love God, but they're at least willing to acknowledge or be in some kind of relationship.
Jesus Christ is the Almighty God, the one and only Almighty God.
It's a little bit like meeting place in the non-physical sense of meeting place, but I would say what makes us a church in this group is a respect for each of us in our current line of thought.
Any other burning things to add to that list?
The church is our connection to the divine, and my understanding of that connection is a belief that there is an influx of life into us, that we are recipients of love and wisdom, and that connection is the living church potential within us. So a belief in divine influx is divine. What I'm getting at.
Is that okay to put that just that simply?
Yes,
that
yes.
I've got another one, and that's search for knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
experience, strength, hope.
Should we have that as search for spiritual knowledge?
So that's where I hope we are as a group. Now, where I go from here is the noticing that we, define that in a couple of levels, I'll do that in a minute, we are not very good actually with change. So a couple of levels. First of all, as a we, as a church organisation, we are not very good with change. This is one of the main reasons why I bought my little collection of New Church Life, because there's some fabulous articles in here. It began with the reinvention of New Church Life in January, February 2011. And Reverend Derek Elphick, is that right? I think. His articles about change, and then it was serialised into the next edition. If you haven't read that, you should. But it's all noticing that we are not very good with change. Then in the latest but one, New Church Life, John Frost from Perth wrote an article, or it was reprinted in the New Church Life, called Spiritual Sustainability. And he writes, "As a lay leader, I find it difficult to source sermons which are in sync with young people and with newcomers." So that's the we, the collective level. But I also notice, and I want to own up to the fact that I notice, that I myself am not very good with change. Now, again, I'm going to be talking about a couple of examples here that I've been working with recently, but I don't want to get hung up on them. These are just my examples, and you may have your own. So please, when I talk about this particular issue, I'm not talking about this particular issue, if you see what I mean. It's a broader thing, and I really want to encourage people to think broad. My thing over the last little while, and this may well be my question that I could have brought up earlier, is marriage. We have recently in Australia just had a vote in federal parliament about redefining what marriage is. Now, so we've had motions to redefine marriage to include same-sex relationships. I really haven't coped very well with that at all. What's also happened, and I think it's partly been as a result of that, is of course I then take part in conversations in my sphere of life, and particularly I think in conversations I've had in the school staff room about marriage. And it's not just on the issue of homosexual marriage, but there's the whole issue of what marriage is, what it means to people. And I've often found myself feeling very, very sad that these things are being said about marriage. I mean, I can quote two people, two ladies who I know well, who I have a good respect for. But listening to these two talk over lunch one day, they were basically saying, well, you know, marriage does not mean to them what it means to me. And I find myself sad about that. We've not really a good sense of what I want or should do about it, I just find myself sad. And the dynamic that I notice that happens within the church, and I think, again, it happens within men too, is that we have this sort of two sides of the coin, as it were. We recognize that there is change about in the world. We recognize that, for example, you know, we might say, well, all of these things are happening because the churches in the history have, you know, declined over time, and spirituality doesn't have the place that it should have in people's lives because of what the church has done to it. So we have this, on one side we feel we have an explanation for why these changes are taking place. But on the other side, we also turn around and we then complain, why aren't people more religious? Why are the spiritual things of life being neglected as they are? So there's this sort of dichotomy going on. And I say, I find it happening within the church, within the group of people, and I find it happening within my own mind. The thing about that is, this name implies change. Now, we've made it mean a particular thing, I'll explore that in a minute, but it implies change. There's no doubt about it. Anyway, moving on.
Well, it implies... I'm with you halfway.
Okay.
Church does not imply change. Church implies standard continuity of a known concept. New implies change. But when it's married to church, I think that becomes a little bit...
Oxymoron.
That's David's word.
I want to just make two observations about this situation that I find myself in. First of all, I notice that one of our tendencies is to multiply the tenets of faith. So what we tend to do is we tend to add all these points that we think people ought to believe to be a part of the church. So... Again, I dipped into New Church Life and I found a series of statements about, which were said to be, our belief is that there can be no real establishment of the church specific except on the basis of certain things. Among these are listed. And they listed several points. But then you take those points and you look at a simple statement like the faith of the New Church, and there is nothing in common. Do we all know the statement of the faith in the New Church?
No, I don't.
In TCR, in chapter 3, there is one God in whom is the divine Trinity, and he is the Lord, Saviour, Jesus Christ. What's the next bit? Saving faith is to believe in him.
Good should be done.
Evil actions are not to be done. That's the short sentence.
And then good.
Because they're from the devil. It says that.
It does say.
Even though it's written, why should say there is no devil?
So, those are the points. The Lord, what faith is. Evil is not to be done. Good is to be done. And it's to be done from them, as if from himself, but it ought to be believed that it's from the Lord working in man and by him. There's our statement of faith. And yet, these are the points which I said. Our belief is there can be no establishment of the church specific except on the basis of certain things. Again, please don't get hung up by the fact that I'm reading from where I'm reading. Acknowledgement of the Lord's second coming in the heavenly doctrine. Recognition of the divine authority of the writings. Belief that the church is new and a church, not an advanced denomination of Christianity. Belief that evil and falsity must be seen and judged before good and truth can be established. And there's so much more in that statement than is presented within the faith of the new church. See? Then I'm just going to throw it back to myself. My own ideas about marriage, and particularly I'm going to talk about homosexuality and the idea of homosexual marriage. My tendency is to expect every other member of the church to agree with my point of view. And probably most of us have been in a similar place. Tendency is to expect others to agree with me. And if we're not in agreement, then there's something wrong. Well, who is it? Certainly not me. You know, that's our tendency. So the effect of this multiplication of the tenets of faith is an exclusion. It's to put a wall between me and others, whether we intend that or not. So Derek Elphick, in his article, he writes, AR, Apocalypse Reveal 82, says, every church in the beginning regards the goods of life in the first place and the truths of doctrine in the second. But as the church declines, it begins to regard the truths of doctrine in the first place and the goods of life in the second. So that's the quotation from Swedenborg. Then he continues, has the new church historically tended to place doctrine first or second? I sheepishly suggest the first. We've tended to put doctrine in first place. So that was my first observation. We tend to multiply the tenets or the requirements of faith. The second thing we do is we have tended to place the change as a point in history, a point in time. So we've taken a little phrase that I've heard quoted many times, behold, I make all things new. As a point in time. So, on the 20th of June, 1770, the second coming was over. It was yesterday's news. It was wrapping fish and chips. If we take it as a point of time. So, what I would like to suggest is a radical rethinking of who we are, what we are. And I'm suggesting that we ought to become a church of change. And so what I'd like to see is a couple of things. I think we need to, rather than multiply our definition of doctrine and increase it, we actually ought to be going the other way and paring it down to the bare essentials. Going back to Derek Elphick, he writes, I believe one reason we're not growing is because our official message is not in sync with the times or applicable to the needs of members and non-members. Then he says, getting our message in sync with our listeners is relatively easy, and I am going to disagree. I do not believe it is easy. And the homosexuality debate is one such area in which that is most definitely not going to be easy. Over a number of months, I've been doing a bit of reading on the internet and various things, and one of the things I came across was a website, an internet blog, discussing this issue of marriage and homosexuality within a new church context. And one of the things that was blatantly obvious to me was here are a group of people who were conversant with the writings. I presume many of them had grown up within spheres like Brynathyn, or certainly within the New Church. But to these young people, so people in their teens and 20s, the idea of homosexual marriage presented no issue or problem whatsoever. And they looked at the rest of the New Church saying, well, homosexuals should not be married, as being rather odd. I look within my own family. So I have three children. They're in that age range, 15, 16 and 19. Now, what I find interesting is two of those children at least regard themselves as quite committed and strong New Church people. They enjoy coming to services. They enjoy hearing what is being said, from what is being read from the Word. They enjoy discussing spiritual topics. But again, to them, the idea of homosexual marriage is what? Okay. That there's no issue or problem there for them. So this is just me saying that I think there are places where coming to terms with change is going to be painful. We can't just rebadge our message in some respects. So this is where I wonder, what is it that we can say for certain are the requirements of membership of the church? Because if I talk to my children and those people on the internet site in their teens and 20s, having an issue with homosexual marriage is not part of it. So you can see that there's a bit of pain involved.
Doesn't this reflect the way that society has changed, and the youngsters nowadays just absorb these ideas and think that all of this is quite normal? So they say they have. I've heard it said many times that I have no problem with homosexual marriage. It's not going to affect me. And I think the evidence that we have in places where homosexual marriage has been accepted is that considerable change follows. And so I think the way that the youngsters see things is just a reflection of the times and how things have, well, if I can use the word, deteriorated. I think our moral standards have diminished over the decades, and what we see all around us is a reflection of this.
It's a lack of. It's really interesting, Dave. Because I'm really sort of grappling with this in my mind, and as I'm quite sort of trying to follow this and in my head trying to go from a New Church point of view, well, what is a fundamental? Where do I stop? Why do I have a problem with this? And etc. etc. Happy that it was voted down 76 to 20 or something like that. But there is, on one sense, there's a couple of things I want to say. One is that in the current environment, the young ones, the 18, 20, 24-year-olds, they haven't established their moral absolutes. They haven't established their compass. They haven't got the maturity that they have. When I was 20, I knew everything. Now I know nothing. But I knew everything and I wanted to change the world. And that's what people are like. And so they've gone on with this bandwagon. And this is one of their humanistic, I'll help the world make a better place by voting for this, without realising actually what the consequences of that is. One of the things that I've come up with in my mind is about where the people in a category come from themselves, and how you look at them as individuals, and how you look at the activity. or you know, that's going on. And I separate those two very, very strongly. And, you know, I've got a cousin that's a homosexual. They've had a partner for, you know, probably 15 years. Very pleased for them, you know, in terms of having a good partnership and all of that. But ultimately, it's what it represents and what marriage is that, for me, I object to the use of that terminology rather than the fact that people can congregate together and make that choice.
Yeah.
Can
I just say again, I don't want to get hung up on homosexuality. It's a...
Oh, no, you pointed out.
But what I'm saying is, you're going to have fundamentals.
Yeah.
And when we talk about new and changing our message, we always have to, as you say, we have to keep in mind what is the ultimate minimum that we need to stand for, but they aren't going you're going to have absolutes.
Yes. The question is where it is and how you define
yes.
it. Like, Julian.
The only thing I would say is, I think we live in a world or an era when a working relationship is basically the definition. Okay? The template's right, the formula's right, and so, you know, that's fine. Whereas in the New Church, our whole understanding of marriage is based on a corresponding relationship.
Yes.
A corresponding relationship that is, as it is, due to opposites and love and wisdom and good and truth and so on and so on and so on. So, you know, that is our boundary of our understanding of marriage. It's not just simply a working relationship within any time frames. So, you know, that I think makes it distinct for us and difficult for us. Because it's not a perception in general with people. And yet there it is, and we sort of adhere to it to some extent.
Yeah. John, did you have something to add?
Well, the only thing I can say was that I think there's quite a difference in attitudes between generations now, and it might be technology, it might be communication, understanding, but certainly when we have work functions and people say they're bringing on their partners, I don't even know who in the department, and it's quite a surprise sometimes as to, and it's quite accepted now, and it's within my workplace, any sort of discrimination is very much taboo, which sort of accentuates this. And I think the generation coming along, while I admit they'll change some of their values, I think they also see the previous generations as being quite discriminatory and quite bigoted about things. So they actually think the values are improving rather than decreasing. While we see them as decreasing, they see them as improving. So, you know, you've got a real clash, and it's a very useful dinner time conversation, because my values are very different from my kids in terms of what's right.
I've just had a question thinking about this, but this has not been passed in Parliament, has it?
No,
that's correct. It's been voted down.
Yes, voted down, that's what I thought. Now, all the states have their own parliaments, but none of the state can vote or do anything about marriage, because the Australian Constitution, that is where it defines marriage, and all the marriage laws come under the Commonwealth of Australia, none of the states. So, I think it's, let's face it, God made male and female anyway, so for the procreation of the human species. If everybody turned homosexual, one generation, the whole world would be extinct. So it's not, can't be a marriage, really. If they want a relationship, they can have a relationship, but sort of don't call it a marriage, because it's not.
I'm going to change direction.
The problem with all of these, and I understand where you're coming from, but the problem with all of these comments about whether homosexuality should be legalised or not is that they were all made over liberation of women. They were all made over
equality in our society. They were all made over the freedom of people to live together without being married. You know, we're repeating the same arguments over and over again and thinking that we've got to be right because this is so wrong. And I think we might have to come to the place where we say, if this is going forward, that can only be happening because there's some sort of purpose behind it, whatever it might be. Just like there was a purpose behind all the previous liberties that we now take for granted.
Yeah, I don't want to continue the discussion, but there's a massive difference between all of those liberties and discrimination that was held then compared to what is happening now.
Yeah. Then there was because
this is where I'm moving to. Moving. I haven't got there yet, I think. Moving. For one thing, as I said, I think we need to pare down and really examine very carefully what it is we require for membership of the church, for example. But the second thing is our attitude to change. I think we need to recognise that change is not an historical one primarily. I don't believe the Lord came into the world to institute an historical change. Yes, he did institute an historical change, but the purpose of it was the change within me. And the change within each one of us. Now, the problem with exclusionary doctrine is you then exclude the possibility of change in a way, or you exclude yourself from participating in a change that ought to be taking place. Now, in terms of homosexual marriage, I remember discussing with friends about this friend's father who was a celebrant of marriage in another church. He felt very strongly about homosexuality, that it was not marriage. But he also felt very strongly that his place was more to be a part of a person's life and to be an instrument of change rather than trying to drive that particular point home. Now, my fear for the church is if we drive that point home and thereby exclude ourselves from people's lives, we do not then become the agent for change that we should be. Now, I don't for one minute at this point in time believe we should stop preaching what marriage is. But I withdraw from saying we ought to do anything which is going to prevent us having opportunity to do that teaching. David, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I mean, one of the difficulties with the whole, I mean, my idea of the church is where self-examination and repentance is taking place. When you know, the Christian church, the old church, or the traditional Christian church, the Christian church became a church focused on morality. Not all of it, but it's public face, you know, outside of monastic kind of work and things like that, really was in a social context, was all about morality. And it's an illusion that we can actually stem the tide. That's an illusion. What will happen? We live in a democracy. And ultimately, it will will out, whatever that is. So the role of the church isn't really one of getting up on the national stage and expecting everybody to fall into line. I mean, the idea, if anyone did that to anyone else on an individual level, I mean, you wouldn't tolerate it. You know, yet we have within the Christian community this idea that they can tell others how to live. They have a right to tell others how to live.
Because they are right.
So, where I see it is that this is the legacy of being an institution, externally focused. If the church moves to a more internal focus, where individuals are taking responsibility for their lives, then the possibility of them being led by the Lord increases. And I know you don't want to sort of get too much into the homosexual marriage thing, but at the end of the day, you know, the church at one stage was dead against homosexuality, full stop. Okay, but now it's okay. Okay, look, you can have your partner, but God forbid that you can be married. So, you know, things are already moving down a particular path. And so what the shift is that you don't tell people what it is or what it is they can or can't do. What you do is you continue to put forward the ideals. And then really, you know, if they are practicing an internal life to whatever degree is possible for them, it's then between them and the Lord as to how that plays out for them. Now, there are things in all our lives that we struggle to deal with and probably won't be dealt with until we get into the spiritual world. So, you know, you've got to be careful about, you know, going carte blanche about things, because people are, you know, people are people. They're human beings, and their lives may be in disorder according to what my standards are, you know. My life is in disorder according to other people's standards, no doubt, but including my own. But it's a work in progress. A regeneration is a work in progress. We don't all jump from being unregenerate to being regenerate.
Hang on, Paul. Can you be brief?
Go.
Can you be brief?
I can try.
Okay.
I think it's, I can have a different perspective on this. But first of all, I feel absolutely part of this big group, even though I'm not a new church member, I'm not the only United Church or a Pentecostal. To me, what I observe is the Christian church as we know it, within its dying throes. Most of the churches I go to in 20 years' time, I didn't exist because I'm the youngest one there. So to me, as we know, the Christian church is finished, Buddha's finished, except for certain countries and small modules. What has been written down there in blue, to me, if Emanuel Swedenborg, if I was Emanuel Swedenborg sitting here, I would agree with everything on there, but I would say that is nothing at all what I meant as Emanuel Swedenborg. To me, Emanuel Swedenborg was talking about something far, far beyond all that within it. And to me, the only way forward, I can see, what is Swedenborg was there at the time when science and religion were fighting. Before Swedenborg, the church was truth. It was just as simple as that. And then science came along and challenged that truth, and science won. And nothing, as far as I can see, there is nothing on this planet that's going to be science. So the winner is science. But to me, God is science. And to Swedenborg, I believe, God is science. It's one and the same thing. Religion, as we know it, and as I love it, and we probably all love it, to me it's finished. We're just the last of it. The future is what I call the science of life. And to me, it's what Jesus Christ brought. He brought a science of life. He brought life more abundantly, what he was trying to do. And he brought, to do that, you have to renew your mind. Just as Paul said, you cannot even enter the kingdom of God without renewing your mind. So it's a mind thing. I'm going to say it's a mind science, and I'm going to say it's a life science. And the community out there, people will only, a modern day person brought up in a school today with scientific reasoning is far different 50 or 100 years ago, when people didn't have much education, and you could say, believe this. That's all beautiful. And I go to third world countries and I love their attitude far more than I love ours. But it's not, it just doesn't happen in this society. It has to be science-based.
Okay, can you be brief?
Oh, I'll be brief. I think one of the important things in my mind is the projection externally of the values that we hold important as a society because they point to truth. If we lose sight of the fact that collectively we have to have that standard upheld in front of us and we don't have that kind of guidance, I think it's very important that people sort of, you know, it's if you have an ideal like marriage, but you sort of like, well, forget about that, or whatever else it may be. If you don't have those morals in front of you, it sometimes, particularly when you're growing up, you lose sight of what the ideal is. And people feel secure. And in Africa, I know that they're very, sometimes a bit too strong, but they're very clear where they're at. In the Islamic world as well, very clear, these are the morals, this is how you live. Now, whether you're right or wrong or whatever, sometimes it's better to be wrong but still be strong. But the issue is that if we, in our philosophy, it's all back to the individual person's relationship and what happens in their mind and things like that, not as much important what happens externally, which is fine, but collectively you still... Just like Swedenborg writes, if you have a problem in your relationship, you still pretend you love your wife for the benefit of the external world. You know, and then things will resolve itself. And I think the same thing with the other morals, that I think we have an important place to help society hold up the ideals that should be there.
So who enforces it?
Sorry?
Who enforces it?
Well, no. It's, well, this is where you live in a democracy, right?
But, that's right.
But so we have a voice in that democracy, you know, the salt of the earth and whatever, light of the world, whatever the case, you know, whatever. We can participate in that voice. And if we're clear about what the ideals are and we let our voice be heard, and at least that's, I think, where our responsibility ends. We can't change people, we can't force people. They have to accept people's choices and freedom, and we can't judge the individual necessarily on a part of that, right? But you can say, well, where does it impact on the image or the ideal that we have sitting there? How does that denigrate or deteriorate that particular image? And we have to try and protect that.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to jump in because we don't have very much time left. John, can you be incredibly brief?
I 2 points very quickly. One, I think we all have things within our internal we have to work on, and I think that's very important. And my second point is, David, what a great topic to have after lunch. It just keeps us going.
Yes.
And I think an outstanding effort.
Gets the blood up, you guys. Gets the blood
up. Now, to finish off, I think what's very, very important for us is to realise that when we speak about change, we are not speaking about change historically, we're not speaking about change out there, we're not speaking about change in the future. We are talking about it, and we need to talk about it in terms of me, here, now. Because the thing is, the change is and ought to be happening in every one of us right here and right now. And this is what, for me, the church is fundamentally about. Never mind anything else, it is about change within my life. Now, a slightly different slant on this whole thing is, where would I be now without the debate on homosexual marriage? I can tell you where I would be. I would be a good deal more comfortable than I am right now. But I certainly would not have the grist to my mill of regeneration and rethinking my own ideas about things. So, irrespective of what you think of homosexual marriage, the fact that the debate is going on has raised things within me which I think I will ultimately find useful in my spiritual development. Therefore, is it a good or bad thing that it's happened? I just want to draw everybody's attention to this little book, Swedenborg and the Dynamics of Transformation, which has been sitting on my bedside table under a mounting pile of books for, I think, the last 12 months. And I started picking it up and reading it. And Philip Groves writes these, and I've got a few here, but I think they're worth listening to. Conflicts of interest seem an important aspect of human life because it reveals the two faces of the coin of existence. To struggle between opposing tendencies, each with its own attractive features, keeps the mind alert and prompts it to search for a truth or revelation which will decide the issue and end the conflict forever. We work best when the conflict is active because we are more awake, more conscious, but of course, most people do not like this internal conflict and suffering, they do not understand it, and complain about it quite often, seeking an easy escape from its tension. This pattern of development is true for every living person. A long period of study, learning, practice, contemplation, and exploration is necessary before any great transformation can possibly take place in the depths of the psyche. Yet people do not want to accept this universal principle, and either they assume that rapid growth and perfecting will take place in their lives, or they egotistically pretend they already possess heavenly secrets and only seek confirmation of their ideas. These are all familiar concepts to us from within the writings of Swedenborg. The need for temptation, the need for challenge, in order to help us to grow. So it's just a different way of looking at things, and I think we really need to refocus as a church for change. So one of the interesting questions that comes up from time to time is, well, why is the new church so old? Most people here, if you've been in the church for a number of years, would have been asked that question. Well, my answer to that now is changed, because it is what is an attempt to bring out what is new in me, and that is eternally new. It's not bound by time. It's a process that I am going through, and that you, in contacting with the having some contact with the church, I hope you have opportunity for as well. And I think because of that, we need to recognise that faith and church is a journey, and it's a journey that we need to share with others. But it's the journey. It's not the points of faith that we expect people to adhere to, because when you nail it down, it's not going to move. And if you expect someone to adhere to it, they are not going to move. Because we're expecting something and it's stationary, static. What I feel we need as a church of change is a commitment to change and a commitment to growth. Let's say this is very much a journey that I'm on, and I'm not there yet. But thank you for joining for my 1 hour or so, and I hope that we can all continue that journey in our own way.
Two-minute break.